You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who once tore his ACL playing chess, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back. We are kicking off Act 2 here of Nightlight on a Tuesday night, a beautiful Tuesday night, and one of the most fun, relaxing weeks, I would say, of the year. A lot of people take time off. We've got time between Christmas and New Year's to just kind of chill out and hang with family or by ourselves, watch some color television, whatever we prefer. It's a great week, and this is our last live show of 2025. So it is great to have you here, folks. We'll have highlight shows coming up Wednesday through Friday and be back live on January 5th, kicking off the new year, right, with New Year's resolutions galore and all kinds of fun stuff. But for tonight, we've got a lot of show coming up, and I'm going to recap the show after we welcome this next guest because he is a busy guy, and we love talking to him about the NFL and all things sports. He is a Civic Media Sports Authority and our pal, who covers the Packers like no other, Mr. Mike Clemens. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Pete. You know, I wonder, maybe there's still some people with the cabin up north where there's still a black and white TV. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I hope so. That would be kind of fun and nostalgic. Yeah. What are you rocking, Mike? You got a big flat screen there for all your clips?
Well, I'm in my motel room here at the Bay Motel in Green Bay. But we actually, my wife got tired of waiting for me. I said, look, when the season's over with, I'll be home and then we'll go out and get one. And then my daughter came back from Boston and said, oh, this is ridiculous. And they just went out and bought their own new damn TV. So I don't even know how to work it. I'm the man of the house and I don't know how to work the new TV. I found out over Christmas. So,
that's whatever. Very emasculating. You could buy a black and white plasma, Mike, or a little black and white like Michael Scott had on The Office. I don't know if you ever saw that episode. It was very funny.
I'm so busy during football season and as busy as baseball got toward the end there and still running down to see, you know, some Bucks or Badgers from time to time that I can't think of them. I saw the last time I saw a film was on a plane ride, you know.
Oh, wow.
Well, and I, you know what, is one that I thought did tremendous marketing during training camp, and I was too busy. But the marketing for Naked Gun with Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson, I thought she like reinvented her career, and you know, and their little alleged, you know, off-camera affair and all that stuff, and all the social media stuff. I thought, man, this is a brilliant marketing campaign they've got going. So I was excited because it was on the long plane ride back from Denver. I thought, I'll watch this movie that I get a chance to see in the theater last summer. Not so good. I loved Airplane from the Zucker Brothers out of Sherwood, which, by the way, my brother is like an IT person for those guys, for David and those guys out in L.A.
Nice.
I love The Naked Gun because, you know what, Leslie Nielsen was funny. You know, he played all those melodramatic roles in the 50s and 60s, and when they tabbed him to switch to comedy, like with Lloyd Bridges and all that, it was funny. But Liam doesn't pull off funny very well.
I think we discussed this briefly last time you were here, and I had David Zucker on the show probably 2 months ago, and he was not happy about the remake. Like, he had a script for it and everything. Now, he didn't trash it. He stayed pretty much above it, but you could tell there were some bad feelings there. And when you see the movie, you're like, yeah, there's a few laughs. There are a few laughs, but it's not the Zucker Brothers, and it's not Leslie Nielsen.
I had about five snort laughs at the thing, you know? Like, okay, that's fun. That's kind of clever. I thought, am I missing something? Is there like a bunch of cameos from contemporary stars that are in the background that I'm missing? You know what? You know, what is it?
Totally agree with you, Mike.
Yeah. The reason he was, that David was being diplomatic, royalties.
Yeah.
Piece of the action.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I think he's probably doing okay, but, you know, at some point, you know, he's been around so long. He knows the drill. He knows the dance. It's just, yeah, he was very interesting to talk to. But
so you were able to see the game Saturday night?
I did, yeah. And I really thought, you know, the the Ravens kind of broke it open a little bit, and Derrick Henry was unstoppable. But man, I thought the Packers with Malik Willis could make a comeback there, and it looked like they were going to for a while.
Speaking of flops, right? it's 27. It's 27-24, and now the defense has finally gotten a stop because the Ravens scored every time they touched the ball in the first half, and the first time coming out of halftime, they were unstoppable. Field goals, touchdowns, whatever. But then now you got them 3rd and 5, and Derrick Henry runs for 9 yards, gets a first down. On the next play, he runs for 30. 216 yards rushing, 4 touchdowns. The last touchdown, Rashawn Gary gets blocked out by a receiver who he can't shed, and Derrick Henry just runs by him. You know, basically, you know, number 52 is out there escorting him to his 4th touchdown. They have not had a visiting running back score on them 4 rushing touchdowns since 1984 in a game against the Buccaneers. Wow. Emmitt Smith one time had 4 touchdowns. One, though, was a reception from Troy Aikman back in 95. But, I mean, it's epic. So what I did, you know, some of the things I do for some of the networks is, you know, they send me over to talk to maybe the guys from the winning team. So John Harbaugh, veteran coach, he's won 1 Super Bowl as the head coach of the Ravens, where he beat his brother Jim when they beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl. John Harbaugh comes to the podium, and he talked about this big win, and now they're back to 8-8, and now they're just a game behind the Steelers, and they're going to meet next Sunday night for the AFC North title, and this is the head coach after the game.
Just a heart-defining win is what that was. The type of win that makes you proud to be a Raven, makes you proud to be with these guys every single day, starting with Derrick Henry and Tyler Huntley and everybody else that led the way to this victory. So very proud of these guys, very grateful for this game, very grateful for this win. Derrick talked about it in the pregame prayer and talked about I'm gonna make you ask him what he said in the pregame prayer and what he talked about to the guys, because I just think the belief on this football team is at a level that I've never really seen before, because we've been through a lot.
Yeah, that's how could you not say that after that win? And they had Huntley at quarterback, Mike. Like, we're talking about Malik Willis, who has performed beautifully, but they beat the Packers with Huntley.
Yeah. And, well, but, you know, you knew that Lamar Jackson had jacked up his back in a game, I think it was against the Patriots, and he was listed as doubtful, but there was just no way he was going to be playing this week. So you knew that. You knew this game was going to be the Derrick Henry show, who's 32 years old now. He's 6'3", 252 pounds. He has the largest biceps I've ever seen. I've been around him a couple times now. And he's a train, and it takes an extra effort to bring this guy down. Derrick Henry, then, you know, he came to the podium and said, "Hey, coach said that you did a little speech before the game. What did you tell the team?"
I did the prayer before the game, and, you know, I just talked about guys just playing free and trusting and believing in each other. Now, we've been through a lot this season. I mean, there's no shying away from that. We know what we need to do to be able to still give ourselves a chance. And that's just playing for each other and understanding that, you know, the Lord's going to be there with us regardless, and he's been there with us this whole time. So, you know, hats off to guys just blocking O-line, like Coach Harvey said, tight ends, receivers, fullbacks. It's the unselfishness of them, you know, sacrificing, you know, their bodies, you know, for us to have success in the run game and dominate the line of scrimmage and dictate the game the way we want to.
It's like a lot of players do that, Mike. They thank God or Jesus for the win and that kind of stuff. And it reminds me of the great comedian George Miller, who used to go on David Letterman and said, "Yeah, the game was going really well until Jesus made me fumble." He would just love to hear somebody say that.
Letterman loved him. He was so funny and such a great writer. Yeah.
He was funny. You know, Derrick Henry, 32, though. I mean, are there backs that are 32 that are still every down backs? It seems like they're like, you know, come out of the backfield to make catches, but Derrick Henry, man, still going strong.
Adrian Peterson played pretty late, you know, so did Emmitt. I mean, guess what? He's a future Hall of Famer. So Tyler Huntley, who they've been calling Snoop now, the backup quarterback, who gets a lot of play because Lamar Jackson's always out there running around getting banged up. listen to this carefully. And on what he saw after he was handing the ball off to Derrick Henry 30-plus times, all those yards, and scoring four touchdowns.
Right when he touched that ball, I was like, yeah, they not ready. They not ready. And he ran straight downhill. Our linemen blocked. Our tight ends, receivers, they blocked. And then, you know, that was – and everybody executed. So.
My guest is Mike Clemens. He joins us here on Nightlight periodically to talk Packers, Brewers, Bucks. He does it all. And we're talking about the Packers loss versus the Ravens last weekend. Mike, what do you make of – I mean, it seems like – where are the Packers at with injuries? And has it affected their locker room at all, to the best of your knowledge?
Well, they were having players drop, you know, like every 10 minutes or so. They lost a defensive tackle, Jordan Riley, to an Achilles. An up-and-coming defensive back, Kamal Hayden, had an ankle injury. Zane Anderson does a really nice job on special teams and is a backup safety. He had to leave the game with an ankle injury. Dontavian Wicks, a wide receiver with a concussion. Two of those guys, Riley and Hayden, they're done for the season. They had to make some moves today on special teams. They're bringing back a guy named Jonathan Ford, who had been a backup for years and recently was with the Bears. They let him go. So, yeah, they're kind of scrambling. You know, it's the NFL. That happens. But I went to Evan Williams, who's this bright second-year safety, a hard-working player. And, you know, the guys in the NFL, they call effort play style. And we asked Evan, what happened in that game? Why couldn't you stop Derrick Henry tonight?
Honestly, I feel like to start out, it's just our play style. That's what it starts and ends with, and I feel like we just didn't have that today. You know, that knockback that we're used to, the physicality at the point of attack, not that, you know, guys weren't straining and stuff. It was just not enough to get it done, and that's all I can say right now.
Edgar Cooper called it embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, anytime you come out, you got to have something to prove in this league, you know, on every snap. Otherwise, you know, teams are good enough to come out and embarrass you, like, you know, like what you just saw.
Boy, that's a great quote. And you kind of, like you said earlier, Mike, you know what the Ravens are going to do with a backup quarterback and a horse like Derrick Henry in the backfield. But that's kind of why I was asking about their morale. They just see all their teammates going down and they're kind of limping into the postseason. It's got to be a little demoralizing.
Yeah, you know, listen, they've lost three games in a row now ever since what? Micah Parsons went down.
Right.
And when they acquired Micah Parsons week one in the huge trade from the Dallas Cowboys, it completely changed that defense. Every time you'd watch the opposing teams, the first thing they had to, you know, Micah Parsons was like a shark in your swimming pool. You can't avoid him. Where is he now? Where is he now? And Josh Jacobs came running, and the star, you know, running back, number eight, who's been dealing with a swollen knee for a month now. And he says everyone, the offense, the defense, and even the coaches need to take a deep dive to figure out why they've now lost three in a row.
I think we all got to look in the mirror. I mean, from the top down, coaches included, I think we got to look in the mirror and, you know, have a reality check on, you know, what we need to do to either give more or, you know, or to do more for this team. And I think collectively as a team, once we do that, you know, figure out what we want and, you know, what direction we want to go and the things that we need to fix and go ahead and correct them.
That was Josh Jacobs. Mike Clemens is our guest. We will be back to break down that comment by the Packers running back after a very short break. We'll have Mike for a couple minutes on the other side of it. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Guys, I want to pump the brakes on all that stuff. I think Jordan Love is playing some pretty high level football, and it's great that we feel the same about Malik in his ability to go in there. I thought he's had two really back-to-back outstanding performances, so we're in a good spot with that position. Certainly have a lot of confidence in both of those guys, but I mean, it's pretty clear that Jordan is our franchise quarterback, and he is going to be the, when he is healthy, he's going to be our starter. So I just want to squash all that.
Welcome back to Nightlight. I am Pete Schwab. That was Packers head coach Matt LaFleur talking about the quarterback situation. Malik Willis has played really well. Mike Clemens is here helping us sort of sift through what's going on with the Green Bay Packers with the playoffs looming. Mike, I love the phrase, the most popular player in town is the backup quarterback, but that pretty much sums it up. As well as Willis has played, you just paid Love all this money, and he's got pretty doggone good numbers too.
Yeah, and, you know, every time that he's had his opportunity, he can move the football. He's more of a running quarterback. Last week, we're down in Chicago, and a guy named Austin Booker, who got fined $10,000, $11,000 for drilling his helmet into Jordan Love and giving him a concussion, that Malik went in there, that he got wrapped up by Montez Sweat, who drilled his right shoulder, his throwing shoulder, into the turf. And, you know, that's been sore all week. He's out there with a sore shoulder, I mean, throwing darts. I mean, zipping the ball around. Do you know what his quarterback rating was Saturday night against the Ravens? 134.6. Darn near perfect.
Wow.
And he's out there running around, throwing. And then at one point in the second half, the pain was so much, he ran off the field into the locker room to get it checked out to make sure there wasn't something serious going on, came back out and finished the game. The third-string quarterback, they've got a guy on the roster named Clayton Tune. He threw a pass to Bo Melton, which bounced off his hands, turned out to be an interception. But, you know, if the defense had shown up, the Packers could have won that game with their backup quarterback. And Malik was asked about, you know, how he felt the effort was during that loss to the Ravens.
We were fighting. I don't think nobody on that offense was not fighting. I think the defense were fighting. I think it just didn't go their way tonight. And that's the way this league works. There are good players everywhere. And we just got to look at the film, step back, and figure out what's wrong and fix it. That's all it takes.
Even more impressive, I think, Mike, is that they had time to – they were game planning probably for Malik Willis, and he still put up those numbers. Like when he went in against the Bears, people said, oh, well, they weren't expecting him. Well, now they were, and he put up – he was great.
There was a guy – see – and people, look, there's no way, and as LaFleur just said, look, our quarterback one is Jordan Love. Please, please, get serious. And he was asked that question because there's so many fans that get on social media or call shows like yours and stuff and say, well, maybe they should start Malik Willis. Maybe he's the one with a hot hand right now. No, no, no. Let Jordan Love come back from the concussion, you know, get through the protocol, yada, yada, yada. Matter of fact, Jordan took most of the snaps last week. He just didn't pass the protocol. Wow. On Friday. So, but let a lesson be learned. You know, let's be innovative, because once upon a time, back in 2017, you had Aaron Rodgers, a guy named Joe Callahan, and Brett Hundley. Mm. I don't think either of those guys are in the league. That's who you decided your backup quarterbacks, because I think they had another guy that was undrafted by the name of Taysom Hill, who during the preseason was lighting up the offense just like you see Malik Willis do. But they didn't think he had as good an arm as these other guys. You know, he didn't have the pedigree. So they released him. Well, guess what? Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, who's now got a Broncos team that looks like they might represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, he said, you know, I was watching Green Bay for their tight ends, and I saw this guy in their preseason. And that's a football player. So he put him on special teams. He made him an occasional tight end. Sometimes he backed up, you know, Drew Brees and the other quarterbacks. He's still playing for the Saints. He won a game for them a couple weeks ago. So it's like, you know, be more creative. If you've got an athlete, find them a spot on the field, and maybe that's what they need to think about with Malik Willis.
Absolutely. Mike, we have about a minute left. It looks like the Packers and the Bears are going to play again. I don't know if I'd say most likely, but a very good chance. The NFC North will be represented in the playoffs, but I think everybody thought they were this big, bad conference, and now it turns out to be the NFC West. How do you like the Packers going into the playoffs, given what they're going through now? Do you think they'll be less banged up in a couple weeks?
No. I don't like what's going on. I don't like how they finished last. You know, when we're talking to Brian Gutekunst at the Combine around a conference table last February, he says, you know, we lost our last three games. Lost to the Vikings, lost to the Bears. That was embarrassing. And then we lost to the eventual Super Bowl champions, to the Eagles, 22-10. We can't have that happen. Well, they just lost three games in a row. This is not the way you want to be playing going into the postseason. So right now they're trying to figure out, do we even play? There's no ramifications in Sunday's game at U.S. Bank against the Vikings other than pride. So do you think you could need to get your team ready, or do you need to get them rested up, and you'll probably play the Bears in Chicago or possibly the Eagles in Philadelphia, because now you're the seventh seed, the last team to sneak in as a wild card. You're playing on the road the rest of the way. But there was a team that once did that. It was the 2010 Packers, and they won Super Bowl 45.
Well said. Mike, thank you so much as always, pal. Hey, do you have a favorite meat, Mike? It's National Bacon Day.
A favorite meat?
Yeah.
A favorite meat. I've been impartial to ham lately. Man, a good ham is pretty darn good, right?
Yeah. I think that's a great choice. And I had to ask because, you know, you cover the Packers. So it was an appropriate question. But thanks, buddy.
Once upon a time on a New Year's Day, Mom got some sort of a great, great ham, you know, with the brown sugar stuff on the outside. And, we're just shaving that off with mustard and nice big soft bun, you know, watching the Rose Bowl. Oh, man, I'm making myself hungry now.
That's living. Hey, buddy, have fun out there at the game this weekend, and look forward to talking again soon. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys.
All right. Thanks, Mike. That's Mike Clemens, Civic Media Sports Authority. Follow him at Twitter, Mike Clemens NFL, and read his stuff. He does outstanding work, as you just heard. So what do you think, Con? Packers going into the playoffs, do they have a fighter's chance?
Packers to the Super Bowl.
Do you rest the starters?
No. Get them out there ready to play.
Out there.
They don't deserve a break. They suck.
Okay, fair enough. News, sports, and weather is next. Then Paul Gilmartin from Dinner and a Movie joins me here at Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Welcome back. I'm Peach Wabba. Happy New Year, everybody. We are barreling toward New Year's Eve here, which is tomorrow. Hope you have your plans. If you don't have plans for New Year's Eve, you need to stick around, because in hour number three, a friend of mine, Jim McHugh, will tell you where you can spend New Year's Eve and get big, big laughs. And following that, if improv is your game, comedy sports head coach Mike Kauth will be here to tell us all about their New Year's Eve shows. We talked about the Oshkosh Festival of Lights. That is still going on. All kinds of options out there. Or you can stay home like most Americans and watch Netflix. Still lots more show to come. This is our last live show of the year. We'll have highlight shows running throughout the rest of the week. But right now, I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. He's been here before, and he is a very good friend of mine. He is very successful, hilarious stand-up comedian, and the former host of the show Dinner in a Movie. He hosted that for years on TBS. A great show. And he joins me now on Nightlight, Paul Gilmartin. Hey, buddy.
Petey Pete.
How are you?
Happy holidays, buddy. Good to
Back at ya.
Good to see you.
You as well.
They rebooted Dinner in a Movie, and I was a guest on it recently, which was surreal.
That is all the questions I had prepped for you, and you just answered them. So thank you for that. I was going to ask you if you watched it, and if they... I assume they would have you on. You were such a great host. What was that like? I mean, you said it was surreal, but like, were they thrilled to have you? I can't believe
very
they
nice.
Even...
Everybody okay. was nice. Like the crew, like I walked in and they like clapped. And I mean, crews are always, and especially production staff are you in show business, TV, they're always like falling over themselves to make sure guests feel at home. At least the stuff that I've been on. So, you know, I don't know how much of it was that, but it felt very nice. And Jason and Jenny, the hosts, super nice, very self-deprecating. And it was interesting.
Has Jason Biggs tried to make it with a baked good yet while hosting the show?
I can't swear on this. So all I'm going to say is underwear and muffins. I don't even know what that means.
Well, my wheels are turning, just so you know. Yes. I'm putting a picture together with that, and I love it. So that's pretty cool. This was such a great, I always say, you know, I wish I would have thought of that pitch, because making food while watching a movie, the two just seem to go hand in hand. You had such a great run on that show. And I know at times, Paul, you were this really edgy, great comedian, and you seemed to go into that gig with a little reluctance, but then you seemed to embrace it. It was such a fun gig, I would imagine.
Thanks. I really appreciate you saying that, because as you know, having been a stand-up, yeah, we want audiences to like us, but we really want our peers to like us, because we spend time with them. It affects your professional self-esteem. And I wasn't sure whether or not this show was something that my peers would approve of or not, because, you know, there's a lot of compromises, you know, when you do television, and you have to really dial back what you would normally say as a comedian on stage in a nightclub. And so there was a lot of that compromise, and you don't have control over what's going on around you, just your reaction to it. And so for the first probably 12 episodes, I was in anguish about things that I thought were lame, or the comedic rhythm, or what my co-host was saying. And then it occurred to me, when I had gone through Second City's training program, I was never a paid performer there, but I went through their workshops. One of the things I learned is, instead of trying to steer things into how you think they should be, just be in the moment and react to what is in front of you. And that's when I went, because Annabelle used to really annoy me, and and I thought, I'll have the camera, i.e. the audience, be like a third person for this, you know, get together conversation, whatever you want to call it. So just like when you're around a friend who can sometimes be annoying, you'll look at that other friend like,
right,
oh my God, can you believe this? And that for me was when I feel like I found my legs on the show.
Do you have, like, I think all of us, you know, think we're going to reinvent the wheel when we start doing stand-up comedy, and we're going to be great, and we're going to be the next, Richard Pryor or whatever. But to your point, what you just said, because you were, I remember stuff Dennis Miller said about you before he was crazy and had all these glowing things to say about Paul Gilmartin. But when you get this gig, it might not be Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, but everyone to a person in the business goes, oh, nice. Like, you got a gig, you got a hosting gig, you're making great money. And I know, but I mean,
in terms of not having to be on the road and making money, yes. But
when you look at quality, Paul, but when you look back, do you feel that way now? Were you like, yeah, that was a great, glad I did that.
I do.
Yeah.
I'd always felt that I was really lucky to have found a gig that allowed me to buy a house and not be on the road 40 weeks a year. That, from the get-go, I felt that way about it. And I still feel that way today. The difference how I feel today is I'm proud of the creative work of it, because I can look in hindsight and say, 90% of my anguish was just my low self-esteem and my self-obsession.
Wow,
and
interesting.
I needed somebody back then to slap me and say, get over yourself, go have fun.
Well, I could tell you from the perspective of a guy who was your friend, who I looked up to when I started, and I remember watching you thinking, oh, Paul's great. You know, I loved when some of us moved to LA and didn't have a whole lot of money when we first got there, and you were taking woodworking classes and helicopter lessons. Like, you didn't know what to do with the money you were making. And we just wanted to be in that realm. You know, it's like, God, I just want to get there. You know,
it's funny. Your friends never tell you that at the time.
Yeah.
They keep it to themselves. So while I knew any comedian wants to have a gig and be making money, they don't come right out and say it. And it's really only after time has passes that we have those conversations with each other. And I felt the same way about you as a stand-up in terms of quality. And as a writer, I've always felt that way about you. You had an eye for characters. You know, the Godfather of Green Bay, when I read that script, I was getting over a surgery and it hurt to laugh. And and I was in pain in several moments in that script. And it's very hard to make me laugh. So
I had no idea.
Right back at you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. All right. So you went on the show and I have to say, Paul, I might've said this to you last time you were here, that I was surprised that, you know, you look good. You're in shape.
Oh my God.
You still, but I mean, you could host a show like that. Did they ever come back to you and say, hey, we want to reboot and maybe put you with a younger host or
no?
Okay.
And honestly, even though I would have loved the money creatively, I would just feel like I did all that I could do in that medium with that premise.
Okay.
Because honestly, the last few years of this show, it really felt like I was recycling things and repeating myself. And I always loved the people that I worked with, the crew, the cast, the producers. That part I miss. But yeah, as far as coming up with jokes for Rush Hour 3, no, I don't. We showed that movie, I don't know, like 6 times. And by the 5th time, trying to come up with a joke, you know, when you come out of the movie directly to you, we would usually try to find a joke or something to comment on it. And yeah, boy, it was just tumbleweeds trying to come up with another joke for that. This is going to sound really weird. I hope you don't mind if I change the subject.
No, not at all.
Because of where you are and where you live, I just finished a book about the Edmund Fitzgerald, and it was one of the most compelling books I've ever read in my life.
Oh, no,
the only
kidding
book I've ever seen on Kindle that got 5 out of 5 stars with hundreds of ratings.
Wow.
I believe it's called The Gales of November, but
oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so good. And it I don't know, it just makes me think of that area and just how beautiful and rugged and dangerous and awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. I live in Northeast Wisconsin around, well, Green Bay, obviously, Lake Michigan, Lake Superior is like 3 hours north. I've become fascinated by shipwrecks and these sailors that have to sail the Great Lakes, which at times, as I understand it, is more difficult than the ocean because you don't have those swells that you can ride. The waves are more violent, and that's what they say happened with Edmund Fitzgerald. It might have just split in two, right?
Yeah, because freshwater, and according to this book, freshwater is lighter than saltwater.
Okay.
And so the time between waves can be very, very short. And you can have two waves pushing the ship up at the same time. And if one is on the front and the other is on the back, and you've got 32 million pounds of iron ore in the middle,
right,
it's going to break.
That's fascinating. And I love that you transitioned into the Edmund Fitzgerald from talking about your gig with Dinner in a Movie.
Well, there were both shipwrecks. They were both tragedies that people would rather not remember.
Knew you were going to say that. Paul Gilmartin is my guest. Very funny, very talented stand-up comedian, and the former host of Dinner in a Movie. You know, Paul, we have about 3 minutes, so we have to go to a break. I would love it if you could tell that story. When I moved to LA, maybe we should keep this till after the break. But I would love for you to tell the story when my wife and I moved to LA, and because of the whole Richard Marx fiasco, we stayed at your house because you and Carla, your wife at the time, were out of town. And I had an issue with your dog that I had completely forgotten about until the last time you were on the show. So I'm going to ask you just to think about that. If you could talk about that when we come back from a break. But in the meantime, are you doing any stand-up?
No. No, for a while I was still doing political satire as a character, a really kind of right-wing crazy character.
Richard Martin, right?
Richard Martin, yeah.
Very funny.
But I don't really do him anymore. If somebody invites me to go do something local, I will do it. But yeah.
That's kind of how I am. I do this local football fundraiser every year. It's not a ton of money for a guy from LA, but just keep that in the back of your mind. If you ever want to come to the Midwest, Paul, and tour various shipwrecks,
You are welcome to take the stage at the Little River Country Club in Marinette. So we'll talk about that off the air. But have you ever had the urge, given the success you had, like you said, I mean, who doesn't want a paycheck, right? Right. For you to host another show, could you pitch something similar to Dinner and a Movie?
That doesn't really interest me because that's not where it doesn't get the creative juices flowing. Honestly, what gets the creative juices flowing these days is making furniture. And that's what I spend most of my time. And, you know, I'm still doing the podcast, the Metal Illness Happy Hour podcast. Yeah. And yeah, that does get my juices going too, but I got a lot of juice. I'm juicy. That's what I'm trying to say.
So, all right.
Furniture making, I could talk about endlessly for hours and hours.
That is so cool that you're still doing that. And it's creativity too. Like what a fun, I can't even use a screwdriver, but I admire you for making the furniture. It's pretty cool. So, all right. Paul Gilmartin is my guest. We will have a few more minutes with Paul on the other side of this break. I'm going to ask him to tell a very funny story involving me and his dog, Charlie, that I had totally forgotten about. And I'm going to ask him who his favorite comedians are, given who we started doing stand-up around in Chicago. It was a glorious time for comedians. And I'll ask Paul all about that when we come back after this very short break. It's Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm waiting just for you. Someone's a little boy
loving. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Mike Starr, and you're listening to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. All righty, folks. We've got news, sports, and weather coming up in just a few minutes. We've got a few more minutes with my pal, Paul Gilmartin, who is joining us from Los Angeles over the stream. Paul, I mentioned before the break, when we started doing stand-up, you started a little bit before me, but you had guys like John Rigi, who won Emmys, Bob Odenkirk, Jeff Garland. We all love to watch those guys, but did they influence your comedy in any way? And do you have a favorite of those guys?
I'm sure they did. In terms of my favorite to watch, I would put John Rigi, up there. You know, you, Jimmy Pardo, Bill Leff. I'm sure there are tons of Stephen Leo, comedy Leo, especially Leo. But yeah, there was a lot of guys that I watched, and my then wife Carla was a huge comedy influence on me. Great joke writer, great. She knew how to edit. She probably educated me more about comedy because she wouldn't be around the bush. She would be like, that joke's too long, or there's no joke in there. That's just a premise right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I love that you said, I don't know if I told you this, but I ended up working on a script with Stephen Leo. And when I came back here, they were still, or one of them was in Chicago, the other one was in LA. So we were in different spots. So we would Skype. And I that was so invaluable just to watch those two interact. I was in tears just watching what, like Leo would go and act like the screen had frozen and then he would move, like just Leo being Leo. But the two of them together were so funny. You're right. We were spoiled by the comics we got to watch because it was such a great time for comedy. Are you surprised at Bob Odenkirk's, not success, he was always incredibly talented, but when you see him as an action hero now, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This guy is like, yeah, what is he doing right other than being smart and talented?
Yeah. Yeah, he is one of the most focused, hardworking people I know. I remember one night we had all kind of finished our shows. It was midnight on a Saturday night, and we walked to a bar that had an outdoor patio, and Bob was there writing sketches at midnight, working at midnight on a Saturday while we're all drinking beer. This was before, this probably would have been like 1990, somewhere around then. But no, I'm not surprised at all. And Bob always took chances. He's one of the most fearless people I know.
He was not afraid to bomb. In fact, he relished it seemed like at times. Yes. He wanted to make the back of the room laugh. But It's funny. I heard this great story about him. He was a waiter at Ed DeBevick's in Chicago, and he had written the Matt Foley sketch and sent it to his buddy at Saturday Night Live. I think it was Robert Smigel or somebody. And he's waiting on a table, and there's Chris Farley doing Matt Foley. And he's just like, hey, I wrote that sketch. Like, what a fun.
Really?
Like, yeah, it was just great. And it's just such a great story when you hear stuff like that. And people who are so talented getting ahead. And now he's starring in Nobody, too. It's insane.
I did get to experience that when Dennis Miller had a 5-night-a-week show. I was a fax-in staff joke writer from Chicago. And it would be so bizarre to write a joke that morning and see it come out of his mouth at night. It was a very powerful feeling for somebody who was, you know, I've been doing stand-up maybe 3-4 years at that point. It was very cool.
Here's where I'm at with guys like you or guys that are our age that kind of segued out of stand-up before social media. These great jokes a guy like you did, where do people see them now? They're not like that joke you did about going into the bank and waiting in line forever it was the guy who attempted a transaction that's never been performed before, and he wanted to change the name of the ship on his checks. And you're in line behind this guy, and you freak out, and then you get up there, and you go, oh, thanks, you're letting me go ahead. I'd like $100 in Buffalo nickels. One of the greatest jokes I've ever heard. Where can people see the comedy of Paul Gilmartin these
days? I think that might be on my Comedy Central half hour, which is now about 20 years old. But wow. Comedy Central presents Paul Gilmartin. I think I did that joke on that one. I want to promote my furniture.
Please.
Shapedfurniture.com.
Wow. And you'll ship furniture. It to okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Depending on what it is, it might be expensive to ship a coffee table or an end table, but that's mostly what I make, coffee tables and end tables.
You're selling furniture. Steve Segrin and Leo are selling art. I hate people that leave this business and do great things with, I don't even trust people like you. It's incredible. Good for you. Do you have time to tell the Charlie story? We've got about 2 minutes, maybe.
There's probably parts of it that I'm missing, but I remember I love my dog, Charlie. I thought she was the most perfect dog, affectionate, loved to cuddle. And so when you and Mary were staying over, I was like, these guys are going to fall in love with Charlie. And so we come back home and I was like, how did it go? And just, you were like, she spent the whole time on my pillow, licking her ass. You were so annoyed.
How do I not even remember that? That's so, oh, that's great. Paul, we did a screening of my film that you mentioned earlier, The Godfather of Green Bay, in Madison about a month ago. And it was Civic Media sponsored. It was a great event. Lots of fun at this great spot called the Atwood Music Hall. And on the big company meeting, they said, yeah, and we'll get the proceeds to go to the Dane County Humane Society. And I'm like, I don't even like animals. What is that? And I swear, half the company was like, what? And the chat box lit up, you know, they're
outside of eating them.
No, I just have allergies.
And I love your question of the night. That doesn't get any more Midwest.
Favorite kind of meat. It's
favorite
vague.
Favorite meat.
We got about 30 seconds. You got a favorite meat?
I would say Chicago-style Italian beef sandwich or the pickled human foot. It's very close between the two of those.
Well, I have one of those in 3 tubs ready for New Year's Eve this week. I'm very excited about that, and it's not the human feet. So,
Portillo's or Al's roast beef?
Absolutely. We've been to a few of those places. Paul, thank you so much. Have a great New Year. Thanks, buddy. To the Midwest and hang out. We'll tour the shipwrecks. I mean it. I'm serious.
Love you, buddy.
Okay, buddy. Love you, too. That's Paul Gilmartin, ladies and gentlemen. Check out his Comedy Central special. I was just getting rolling there with the talking, Con. All right, we're coming right back. It's Night Light with Peach Wabba. Act 3 is next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.